Translation. O Suta Goswami, please describe those topics of the Lord by which Maharaj Parikshit, whose intelligence was fixed on liberation, attained the lotus feet of the Lord, who is the shelter of Garuda, the king of birds. Those topics were vibrated by the son of Yas, Srila Shukadev. Purport. There is some controversy amongst the students on the path of the liberation. Such transcendental students are known as impersonalists and devotees of the Lord. The devotee of the Lord worships the transcendental form of the Lord, whereas the impersonalist meditates upon the glaring effulgence of the bodily rays of the Lord, known as the Brahma Jyoti. Here in this verse, it is said that Maharaj Parikshit attained the lotus feet of the Lord by instructions in knowledge delivered by the son of Vyasadev, Srila Shukadev Goswami. Shukadev Goswami was also an impersonalist in the beginning, as he himself has admitted in the Bhagavatam 2.1.9. But later on he was attracted by the transcendental pastimes of the Lord and thus became a devotee. Such devotees with perfect knowledge are called Mahabhagavats, or first-class devotees. There are three classes of devotees, namely the Prakrita, Madhyama, and Mahabhagavat. The Prakrita, or third-class devotees are temple worshippers without specific knowledge of the Lord and the Lord's devotees. The Madhyama, or the second-class devotee, knows well the Lord, the Lord's devotees, the neophytes, and the non-devotees also. But the Mahabhagavat, or the first-class devotee, sees everything in relation with the Lord, and the Lord present in everyone's relation. The Mahabhagavat, therefore, does not make any distinction, particularly between a devotee and non-devotee. Maharaj Parikshit was such a Mahabhagavat devotee because he was initiated by a Mahabhagavat devotee, Shukadev Goswami. He was equally kind, even to the personality of Kali, and what to speak of others. So there are many instances in the transcendental histories of the world of an impersonalist who has later become a devotee. But a devotee has never become an impersonalist. This very fact proves that on the transcendental steps, the step occupied by a devotee is higher than the step occupied by an impersonalist. It is also stated in the Bhagavad Gita 12.5 that persons stuck on the impersonal step undergo more sufferings than achievement of reality. Therefore, knowledge imparted by Shukadev Goswami unto Maharaj Parikshit help him attain the service of the Lord. And this stage of perfection is called Apavarga, or the perfect stage of liberation. Simple knowledge of liberation is material knowledge. Actual freedom from material bondage is called liberation, but attainment of the transcendental service of the Lord is called the perfect stage of liberation. Such a stage is attained by knowledge and renunciation, as we have already explained in the Bhagavatam 1.2.12. And perfect knowledge, as delivered by Srila Shukadev Goswami, results in the attainment of the transcendental service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakayam Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So to set up a scene, We can see in the sages of the Naimisharanya, they have one very interesting trait around them, about them. This was that they had a great desire actually to help all the others living entities, all the other living entities. But due to their attraction to the specific way of liberation or specific way of deliverance, this help for all the other living entities, they've been actually engaging in what kind of activity? Can anyone tell me? What was the activity which was performed by the sages of the Naimisharanya? Sacrifices. And how do we know that they've been performing sacrifices? What was the indication specifically connected with their body? It was spoken previously. They've been all covered in the ashes, yes. So it is said that it's very interesting because when the sages of Naimisharanya went been performing the sacrifice, it was said that I think their desire was to perform it for 1,000 years, right? And when you perform sacrifices, you also need to have a lot of paraphernalias, right? You need to have a lot of ghee, you need to have a lot of specific type of wood, you need to have different sort of offerings. So there was great kind of a logistical way that these sages of Naimisharanya, they prepared themselves for the thousands of years of doing this sacrifice. But you can see that when they approached, or when Sutta Goswami came to Naimisharanya forest, he saw a lot of, and I don't know how much exactly that, but there was a one great number of sages. It was 88,000. Please correct me if I'm wrong on this one. Does anyone know what was the number of the sages in the Naimisharanya? If you do the research, in the meantime, I will continue. So these sages, they've been somehow slightly despondent. They approach Sutta Goswami with words saying that we try our best to perform these sacrifices. But as you may know, for those which have knowledge about how the sacrifices are performed, it takes a lot of, yes, you have the number? 80,000, thank you. So it was 80,000 sages in the Naimisharanya present. So all of these sages, they've been involved in performing sacrifices. And when they approach Sutta Goswami, they approach in the mood of humility. They've been saying, when you perform these sort of sacrifices, it's actually very difficult. You have to spoke the mantras perfectly. You have to have perfect timings. And all the other arrangements are need to be in the perfect manner. Otherwise, the yajna will not bear fruits. But then when Sutta Goswami started narrating Srimad Bhagavatam, as he heard it from Shukadev Goswami in the assembly around Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadev Goswami, when Sutta Goswami start imparting this knowledge unto the sages of Naimisharanya, they start feeling straight away the result. Straight away the fruits of that activity, which before was very difficult to maintain, very difficult to perform, and also very difficult to receive the results. Somehow or another, there was a great taste. Somehow or another, just by discussing the topics about the Supreme Lord, satisfaction came. So there's this one point, satisfaction versus duty. It is this. There's one story which Prabhupada once narrated, and I think it might be somewhere in the Shastras. It is said that there was a scorpion once kind of drowning in the puddle of water. And there was this sage who came and started picking up the scorpion from the puddle. What happens? Every single time the scorpion bited the sage. And again, the scorpion fallen again into the puddle of water. But then the sage again started and pick up the scorpion. And again, the scorpion bite him. And there was one gentleman who was kind of like a bystander, or he was observing this whole situation. And he asked the sage, why are you doing this? Why are you performing this activity? Why are you trying to save this scorpion when the scorpion constantly bites you and kind of delivers some kind of a suffering unto you? Why are you doing that? And the sage answered, the nature of the scorpion is to bite every other living entity who comes into his vicinity. That's the nature of this animal. Nature of a brahmana, or nature of a saintly person, is always to offer help and always to give some solace and somehow guidance. So he is performing his nature, therefore he's not mistaken. But that doesn't mean that I will not prefer my duty, or I will not do my duty. So there's one verse, very beautiful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam 8.744. Tapyante lokatapena saddava prayashojana paramaradhanam tadhi purushaya khilatmana. And this verse is in connection with Lord Shiva. Translation. It is said that great personalities almost always accept voluntary suffering because of the suffering of people in general. This is considered the highest method of worshipping of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present in everyone's heart. So let me repeat that. This is considered the highest method of worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the desire of the sages of Naimisharanya was to help every other living entity. And how? By tapyante lokatapena. This loka, these planets are full of suffering or full of imposed renunciation. Right? You want to do what you want, but you can't. Therefore, it's an austerity. But if you take voluntary austerity for the sake of other living entities, that's for your eternal benefit. So the sages of Naimisharanya had this desire that they took thousands of years of voluntarily suffering for the benefit of other living entities. And by that desire, they attracted the mercy of a pure devotee, Sutta Goswami, who actually delivered the highest, the way of bhakti, the way of discussing the topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the welfare of others. So by the practical experience of the sages, they heard the narrations and they've been satisfied. And what happens? Rather than duty, it becomes a way of pleasure by hearing the narrations of the Supreme Lord. So one of the points which Prabhupada emphasized in his purport is, who is a Mahabhagavat? And within the purport, Prabhupada distinguishes three things. Who is actually Mahabhagavat? The point number one is, he is instructed in knowledge. Point number two, he doesn't make any discrimination or no distinction. And third point, because he was initiated. So how can we understand this? How can we see this? There is one very nice commentary and purport in Chaitanya Bhagavat by Vrindavan Das Thakur. It speaks about who is actually Mahabhagavat in connection with the different stages, right? In connection with Kanishta and with connection with the Madhyama. So this is the purport. When the conditioned state is overcome, or when all anartas are destroyed, living entity under the shelter of service to the Lord Vishnu can remain pure even while residing in this material world. At that time, he is called a Mahabhagavat. So see this point. Mahabhagavat is person who is within this material world, but not in this material world, because all his anartas are already gone. Unless the Kanishta Bhagavat reaches the stage of Madhyama Bhagavat, he remains the servant of the Madhya Bhagavat, even though he is serving a Mahabhagavat. Since the Kanishta Bhagavat desires his own spiritual progress and is traveling on the eternal perfect path to Vaikuntha Loka, he is superior to the conditioned souls who are desirous of material enjoyment and liberation. But he has faith only in Vishnu as the transcendental absolute truth. And this realization qualifies him as a Kanishta Adhikari. When one attains the level of Kanishta Adhikari, he can understand that his spiritual master is situated as a Madhyama Adhikari. And check this out. This is the interesting point. This point is actually saying that depends on your level of consciousness, you perceive other personalities around you. So I'll repeat this again. When one attains the level of Kanishta Adhikari, he can understand that his spiritual master is situated as a Madhyama Adhikari. But when he attains the level of Madhyama Adhikari, he can accept his spiritual master as a Mahabhagavat. So even your vision of the Supreme Lord, even your vision of your spiritual master, even your vision of devotees and everything around you depends on which stages of consciousness you're in. So until devotee breaches that gap, between Kanishtha and Madhyama, he interacts with the world in a different manner, in a different way. Even to such a degree that how do you perceive your guru? Yes, we may say, all glories to my guru, all glories to guru and this and that. But how do you actually relate to your spiritual master? That's internal thing. So this is what is mentioned in here, continuing with the purport. But when he attains the level of Madhyama Adhikar, he can accept his spiritual master's Mahabhagavat. Okay. The Mahabhagavats have no engagement other than service of Lord Hari and his devotees. So this is 1743. This is Adhikanda chapter 7. This is when... What's the name? Vishwarup. Vishwarup is a brother of Lord Chaitanya. So when Vishwarup was taking sannyas, and this is verse 43. So these three points, by instructions and knowledge, no discrimination or no distinction because he was initiated, are the three aspects taken from the purport mentioned by Prabhupada about Mahabhagavats. So only by you receiving a knowledge from a bona fide spiritual source, you have the opportunity to become a Mahabhagavat. And because he was initiated, because he was hearing from Shukadev Goswami, Suta Goswami was hearing from Shukadev Goswami simultaneously with Parikshit Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj is considered to be a disciple of Shukadev Goswami. And let me ask you a question. Does it mean that Suta Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, but also both of them are initiated by Shukadev Goswami? What do you think? Because they heard Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadev Goswami, does it mean that Suta and Parikshit are like God brothers? It's just a question, just like one thing when I was reading it. No? Can you explain? Can he have the microphone, please?
Maharsana Sutta was reciting the Bhagavatam.
Maharsana Sutta.
And Balaram came on the scene, Lord Balaram came.
Is it on? Is the mic on? Okay, no.
Lord Balaram came on the scene in Namasanya. Everyone stood up except Ramana Sutta. He didn't stand up. Lord Balaram killed him in the Kusha grass. And the sages were disturbed. We gave him a long life to recite Bhagavatam. Lord Balaram gave that blessing of long life to Suta Goswami.
So you were saying that, let's say, Balaram is the spiritual master of Suta Goswami. That was my point.
Yeah, in that sense, Balaram is the master of everyone.
Okay.
But in this case, that's what happened. He gave the long life to Suta Goswami.
Okay. I needed to clarify this point. I didn't know myself. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
So that's clear, right? One point, Mahabhagavat covered. So as we've been speaking, there's different visions according to the advancement. So as we said... from this Chaitanya Bhagavat, it describes four stages: conditioned soul, Kanishtha Bhagavat, Madhya Bhagavat, and Mahabhagavat. And all of these different stages depend, they are very much dependent on what kind of association you have. Kanishtha Adhikari can be only uplifted if he has association of Madhya Bhagavats and Mahabhagavats. So there is one very, very nice verse. Satam prasanga mama virya samvido bhavanti hrit krishna rasayana katha tajo sandasva apavarga vartmani shraddha ratir bhaktir anukramishyati. This is Kapila speaking to Madhudevahuti, 325-25. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of pastimes and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to ear and the heart. By cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So even in here, even in this verse, you can see there are different grades and different stages. Say, by cultivating such knowledge, one gradually becomes advanced. So here it is said that doesn't matter which stage you are in. if you are a neophyte devotee, if you are a kind of a medium devotee or Madhyamadikari or Mahabhagavat, there's always opportunity to progress. Parikshit Maharaj was already a Mahabhagavat when he kind of sat down in front of Shukadev Goswami. He was a great personality because he had the darshan of the Supreme Lord. And throughout his whole life, his whole activity was a devotional activity. So such a Mahabhagavat sat in front of another Mahabhagavat. And it was not like a discussion in the sense that, that's it, I'm done, I'm finished, I don't need to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, I'm already pure. No. So whenever, whichever grade of a devotee or stage of a devotee sits and hears Srimad Bhagavatam, there's always some kind of a nourishment you will get out of it. And here is a confirmation by Kapila Dev. So it is said, become advanced on the path of liberation, and thereafter he is freed and his attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. So this verse, and when Prabhupada speaks about it in his purport, this verse is confirming that the real devotional service, the real thing, starts after liberation. And liberation, we're going to dive into after in a moment. But the real devotional rasa, the real taste, starts after the point when you're actually free from all these material desires. So Srila Prabhupada, or specifically in the verse, there are mentioned certain points which are there for us to clarify. And these are the confirmation of the path. So, person. Who is that person? Through the Sanskrit you can see it. Who is that person? Maharaj Parikshit. What is the tool? I ask you to remember the Sanskrit. Adabra buddhi. What does it mean? Yes. Dabra means kind of flickery on unfixed, and adabra means fixed, and buddhi means intelligence. So with the tool of fixed intelligence, Shukadev Goswami attained the taste and pure liberation. Who is the guru? Jnanena Vyasaki, which is another name for son of Vyas, which is Shukadev Goswami. So this is interesting. Jnanena Vyasaki Shabditena. Vyasaki, the son of Vyas, Shabditena, vibrated the Jnanena, the knowledge. So Shukadev Goswami vibrated the knowledge. And then, if you look in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam, what Krishna is actually doing is that he's using his devotees as a confirmation and clarification for the message which should be imparted. So who is this? Khaga Indra. Garuda, yes. Khaga means the birds and Indra means the king. So sometimes, for instance, we not necessarily understand certain topics from the, I don't know, Shastras. But what do we do? What do we say? I said, this is what Prabhupada did. This is what Prabhupada said. This is what Prabhupada emphasized. Right? This is what my spiritual master said. Or even you go, this is what my authority has said. So that position of an authority is a clarification for us to accept the message. So this verse was spoken by the sages of the Naimisharanya. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gornitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, jai. So the fifth aspect was the knowledge of observation about the glories of Maharaj Parikshit, Shukadev Goswami, and also speaking the glories of Suta Goswami. So the fifth element, the fifth confirmation, is are those bhaktas, those sages of Naimisharanya present there. So person, tool, guru, great devotee, and those which observe. So in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the second verse, or the first canto, or the first chapter, is confirmed that the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. It is not said the truth, because truth can sometimes can be, how do you say, usable from different sets of vision. Because what is the truth for Kanishta doesn't need to be truth for Madhyama. You see the point? There's always understanding, and there's always a discrimination, right? Mahabhagavat, he doesn't discriminate. As we said before, Mahabhagavat sees everyone on an equal level. Therefore, it is said in the second verse, the highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. So there is a supreme truth. There is a supreme reality. There is a supreme discrimination. And that is that by you constantly engaging yourself in the studying and narrating and hearing the pastimes of the Lord, there's always a taste. And that supreme truth means there's no discrimination there. Means the highest truth means if you sit down and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, you will have some kind of a taste. And you will find some taste. Even if you're a Mahabhagavat, there will be taste there. That is the supreme truth. And that's why it is said that the supreme religion is actually this Bhagavad Katha. So Prabhupada makes the reference to the Bhagavad Gita 12.5. And in this specific verse, it's very interesting. This verse is basically saying that how these impersonalists are actually going through a lot of struggle within their spiritual life. And don't get me wrong, Mayavadis are spiritual seekers. Why? Because their stage is Brahmeti, then there is Paramatmeti, and the topmost is Bhagavameti. So three stages. Therefore, they are also transcendentalist. But their transcendental seeking is Nirguna. And check this out. So I read this commentary by Balada Vidyabhusha, and it's very interesting. He actually completely negates this aspect of Nirguna, which means without qualities. He completely cuts it in pieces. And I can find you the quotation. So this is from Balada Vidyabhusha in a commentary to this verse. Even though the former category of person, devotees, also endure difficulties in withdrawing the senses from objects other than me, and in engaging in the various angas of bhakti, they do not experience the same suffering because of the dazzling attraction of my blissful form. And then he raised a question. How has this great suffering, which is difficult to remove, arisen? And the answer is, the mind's concentration on the invisible Atma becomes difficult for those who think they are the bodies. The living entities residing in bodies have been thinking they are the bodies for a long period of time. How can they suddenly cultivate thoughts of being a small conscious particle, a concept which they have until now completely rejected? And there's this point. The Brahman without qualities cannot be observed anywhere because it is impossible to prove the existence of Nirguna object. Since the word Nirguna without quality has no power to denotate anything, it is consequently a useless term. So this activity or this concept of Nirguna doesn't actually have a substance. Why? Because how can you observe nothing? Because you need to understand you are the observer, right? And then you have a point of observation. So how can you observe something with your qualities, with your mind, with your intelligence, with your vision, which is measurable, which has certain qualities, has certain stages? How can you observe something which doesn't exist according to the Mayavad philosophy? You can't. It's not possible. Therefore, Balada Vidyabhushan in simple statement just cuts this whole Mayavad philosophy. And why is it easier for devotees to practice devotional service? Because their practice is on the stage of saguna, which means with qualities. Like, look at the Krishna. Give me some qualities of Krishna. You look at him on the altar. Give me some qualities that you observe. Beautiful. Yes, anything else? Loving. Yes, anything else? Happy. He looks happy. All attractive. Any other qualities? Enchanting. Yes, anything else? Sorry? He bends in the three places, three bending. Say that again? Spellbounding. Oh, wow, okay. He looks a little cheeky. Okay. He's playing his flute. All of these which you just mentioned now are qualities. So imagine a devotee, what he can do. We understand the deities, they are not of this material world. But what happens by the mercy of the Lord, the Archana Vigraha descends just so he can deliver a saguna qualities for your benefit. But those qualities are not this material saguna. Doesn't make sense. So this is Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva concept. For us, seemingly with qualities, but on a true transcendental platform, there are no material qualities present there. So it is saguna and nirguna simultaneously. But the Mayavadis are poor, poor souls. Very, very poor souls, because their process is process of so much difficulty. Their only thing they want is to focus on the nirguna, on nothing. Nirvishesha, shunya, zero, nothing is there. And that's why this path is so difficult, because they have no points of concentration, their material senses, right? Because you can observe the Lord, you can offer Him food, you can cook for Him, you can dress Him, you can put jewelry on the Lord, you can put garlands on the Lord, you can do so many things, which are obviously in the line of Parcharati Kavidi. But Krishna, out of His mercy, He's trying to help you with your saguna senses, with your material senses. But He Himself is not material. This is the concept. So that's the difficulties of jnana. And there are also some difficulties with bhakti, because you're letting go of certain things. But it's easier because you have a saguna process. And this process involves that you can engage all your senses. Therefore, worship is easy. And the poor, poor Mayavadis, the poor souls which go on the path of jnana, are lacking the object of worship. That's why their path is very difficult. Then Prabhupada goes further and he speaks about liberation. And you know, you listen to classes by Prabhupada, and I like this section when he says, he just, papabha bama, apavarga. So there's difference between apavarga of Mayavadis and apavarga of a devotees. Baladevidya Bhushan is commenting that apavarga for a devotee means engaging in discussing the pastimes of Krishna, and their apavarga means the realm of Vaikuntha, and their apavarga means the realm of Goloka Vrindavan. So there are certain stages. In the material world, you constantly are forced to do some labor, to do some activity, not necessarily service. Out of that activity, because it's very difficult, Prabhupada says that there's a foam coming out of your mouth. And this form is out of over laboring or doing too much activity to achieve something, which ultimately is actually futile. There's a lot of futility in the activities in the modern world. Why? And Prabhupada said, you build a skyscraper and you engage hundreds and thousands of people to do this. But that skyscraper is, what is it meant for? It's meant for some kind of a material achievements, and it will be finished anyway sooner or later. And we have a devotee, his name is Abhaya. Prabhupada's name was Abhaya. But Bhaya means a fear. Therefore, people with material conception of life are always afraid. Afraid of death, afraid of anything within the material world. And ultimately, in the end, marana, death comes. So this is apavarga. So the Mayavadis, this is the sense of their apavarga. This is what they want to achieve. They want to be free from parishrama, vena, bhaya, vyartha, and marana. This is what they want. And where is it coming from? It's coming from being actually dissatisfied within this material world. So their impetus to act, to get liberated, is based on dissatisfaction. Parishrama, vena, bhaya, vyartha, marana. They are dissatisfied. Therefore, apavarga. They want to get liberated based on their dissatisfaction. But a devotee will go and labor for the Lord. Devotee is ready to perform activity for the Lord. Devotee is not afraid of death. Devotee understands that nothing in his devotional activity is futile. Devotee has no fear. Devotee is abhaya. So this is the result. So what's the use of apavarga? There's no use of apavarga for a devotee, because devotee in the practice of devotional service is already liberated. That devotional service is already apavarga. He is already liberated. There's no death for a devotee. There's no futility. There's no fear. There's no laboring for a devotee. So activity in itself is already an apavarga. So difference between apavarga of a Mayavadi and devotee is very much different. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, Prabhupada refers in this connection in verse 1 to 12. Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya. What does Yuktaya mean? Yukta. Say it again. Connected. Okay, any other guess? Point? Engagement. Jnana Vairagya. Jnana Vairagya Yuktaya. So devotee uses renunciation and knowledge to get to the point of devotional service, and he uses it within his devotional service. But jnana and vairagya, knowledge and renunciation, is also used by the Mayavadis. But they use it as a goal. For them is a goal, but for a devotee is just a tool. And Prabhupada uses these beautiful things on the transcendental steps. Then he said, on the transcendental steps, there's impersonal, and then on the transcendental steps, even higher, there's bhakti. Bhakti mark. That's why devotee cannot become a Mayavadi, but Mayavadi or Brahmavadi may become a devotee or should become a devotee. That's the yoga ladder. That from Mayavad conception, he becomes, hopefully, a devotee. What is that aspect of Mayavadi or Brahmavadi become a devotee? Does anyone know? That's the one aspect. We already spoke about it today. Association of a pure devotee, Mahabhagavat. That's the only way Brahmavadi or Mayavadi may become a devotee. Just like Sutta Goswami entering the forest of Naimisharanya, those sages perplexed and performing their karmakanda rituals for the benefit of others, they received the taste for the narrations of the pastimes of Sutta Goswami. So that one only aspect of possible elevation is a pure devotee. Hare Krishna. I'll finish here. We're coming to that time. Any points, questions? Yes, please.
Hare Krishna, Prabhupada, thank you very much for the class. I was reading many times in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, speaking about this renunciation and knowledge. So can you tell us how do we implement this as a tool in our everyday Krishna consciousness? Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, we try to implement knowledge and we try to renounce as much as possible? Or can you just maybe clarify?
Let's go with the renunciation, right? Renunciation means you're making space in your life, right? So it's simple as that. Like why we do Ekadashi, why we do fasting. The result of this is that you make a space within your day, and how do you fill that space? That's the tool of Vairagya. Vairagya means you renounce something which is bothering you or taking your time, and then you fill that extra space with Krishna Katha or bhakti. And jnana means you utilizing that knowledge to facilitate your advancement in Krishna consciousness, right? So whatever knowledge you may possess should first of all elevate you in a mode of goodness, and then you make that stepping stone mode of goodness to go to pure Shuddha Sattva. So jnana, Aivara, and Vairagya are two tools which no problem are utilized for devotees, and you do it anyway every single day. Srimad Bhagavatam gives Krishna Katha, but same time Srimad Bhagavatam is very practical. Prabhupada speaks about herbs, Prabhupada speaks also about drugs, Prabhupada speaks about what is time, how time functions, Prabhupada speaks about different aspects of Prakriti, Prabhupada speaks about association, he speaks about politics, about culture, he speaks about warfare. All of these are jnana, and by you understanding that, you can use them nicely for bhakti seva. So jnana and vairagya are two tools very much utilized by the devotees.
So when we are reading something and learning something, then we are implementing in our practice, like to see differently, to have a different vision, to elevate our consciousness. And in renunciation, we are actually just kind of letting go our old habits, which we see that, you know, maybe I can put more space for Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah. But the ones that we are actually feel comfortable renouncing, not like forcing ourselves to renounce.
Renunciation, there are different types of renunciation mentioned in Bhagavad Gita in the 18th chapter, that there is renunciation, mode of passion, mode of ignorance, and mode of goodness. So you have always a choice what kind of renunciation you choose. Better to be in mode of goodness. Yes?
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the class. You were mentioning about the vision of a person being determined by the level of advancement. So the Kanishtha is seeing the Guru as a Madhyam, and then the Madhyam is seeing, you know, theirs is like a Mahabhagavat. And we are supposed to be having the vision that the spiritual master is a Mahabhagavat, you know, and we do the prayers kind of simultaneously positioning him next to God. So is it offensive for the Kanishtha to have that vision, but if that's all that he has? And second to that, then does that mean we should be searching for Guru when we're past this stage so that we're not making this kind of an offense? Should we get that stability first? Or because we're also told we should get Guru immediately to be guided from our ignorance.
That's a very good question, very on point. And the answer is actually very simple. In theory, we refer to Guru as a Mahabhagavat, but we speak about vision, which means true chakshush, true vision. You may see in theory, you may say Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his Archana Vigraha form is no different from Krishna in Vrindavan. That's a theory. The question is, do you have the vision? So that's the simple difference. Even Kanishtha Adhikari, he can see Guru as a Mahabhagavat or has a theoretical understanding that he's non-different. He's an external representation of a Paramatma. Theory, yes. Question is it reality within your heart?
So then should we be making this choice once we have the chakshush, or should we just still rely on the
walk theory? The talk and talk the walk, in the sense like, you can try, you can practice it, and until one point comes, then you actually see your guru as a Mahabhagavat. So you can try your best to first theoretically do it, or theoretically have that understanding. And by the process of purification, the point will come. So theory, yes. Reality, yeah. Let's try our best to get there. Hare Krishna. Any other points, Vaishnavis? Srila Prabhupada, no?
It's just a small comment. You mentioned how Mahabhagavats are within this material world, but they're not in this material world, as all their narratives are already gone. And it reminded me of Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj's point of dying before dying.
Mm.
And death is to remove all that is false and secondary. So all their narratives are gone, you're already dead, really.
Mm.
Dying before dying. So thank you.
Thank you. Nice point. Yeah, this is a very nice class. I recommend to everyone to watch it. Die Before Dying by Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. Very powerful. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Nitya Gaura Premanande.